Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, Ashley and I will bring you stories along with Katie Weaver. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, you might have heard that more than 300 election workers died during Indonesia's recent presidential and legislative election. The deaths were blamed on conditions related to exhaustion, the state of being tired, either mentally or physically. One of those who died was Umar Mahdi, a 64-year-old election official in West Java. His job was to keep watch on the voting and count ballots. His daughter, Evi Iriati, said that a stroke was listed as the official cause of death. But her father also suffered from heart conditions that, at the time, were under control. She noted, "My mother would bring him medications, but he didn't stop working. He was happy to do it." Arif Priyo Susanto is an official with Indonesia's General Elections Commission, known as the KPU. He confirmed the number of deaths to VOA. He said, "Generally, the cause is exhaustion." More than 2,000 election workers also reportedly became sick. News of the deaths came as a shock to many Indonesians. The April 17th vote was the first time Indonesia held both presidential and legislative elections at the same time. The first democratic presidential election took place in 2004. This year, as many as 193 million people voted at more than 810,000 voting stations nationwide. Early quick count election results show the current president, Joko Widodo, leading his opponent, former military commander Prabowo Subianto. Titi Anggraini is the executive director of the monitoring group Association for Elections and Democracy. She said the $35 that Umar Mahdi was paid for monitoring the elections and counting the ballots by hand is not enough. She added that having both presidential and legislative elections at the same time was partly responsible for the deaths of so many officials. This year, the KPU lowered the minimum age for elections officials from 25 to 17. It also reduced the number of voters permitted in a single voting center. These rules were meant to reduce the workload for each election official. Yet, as Titi noted, it made no difference, since there are also problems with insufficient ballots and the number of political parties and representatives went up as well. Arif of the KPU told VOA the most the government pays for relatives of the fallen officials is about $2,100. On April 23rd, the health ministry told hospitals and other health centers to give the greatest care to the sick officials. Concerns over holding the presidential and legislative elections on the same day have led to talk of changes in future votes. Asasan Sidzili is a spokesman for Joko Widodo's election campaign team. He said, we have to evaluate the simultaneous elections, especially with regards to the execution. Speaking to reporters, he expressed sympathy for the election workers who died. He said, "I think these officials are a warrior of democracy." The KPU will finish the vote counting process on May 22nd.
About 10% of public school students in the United States are English language learners. In some states, that number is much higher. In California, for example, 38% of students enter the public school system as English learners. Overall, about 21% of California public school students are considered English learners. For years, these students had few chances to receive a bilingual education or take special classes for English learners. In 1998, California voters passed a measure that ended many programs for English language learners in favor of English-only education. The measure was known as Proposition 227, or the English in Public Schools measure. In November 2016, that measure was overturned. Today, California public schools are working to bring in and expand bilingual offerings.
However, progress has been slow. School systems across the state say they simply do not have enough qualified bilingual educators to serve their students. California is not alone in this struggle. 30 other states and the District of Columbia report shortages of teachers in the areas of bilingual instruction and English as a second language. Observers fear a continued shortage will further harm English learners' chances for a meaningful education. But there are national and local efforts underway to find solutions. We talk about those today. First, we will discuss the population involved.
An estimated 5 million students in the country are considered English language learners, or ELLs. Such students are the fastest growing group in U.S. public schools. Last month, the Council of Great City Schools published its latest findings on English learners. The report looked at several conditions for English learners attending public schools in 74 major U.S. cities. In its report, the Council defines English learners as between the ages of 3 and 21, whose native language is not English, and whose difficulties in reading, speaking, and understanding English are enough to keep them from having success in the classroom. The most commonly spoken languages among ELLs in America are Spanish, Arabic, Chinese, Haitian Creole, and Vietnamese. Speakers of those five languages make up 92% of all ELLs included in the Council's report.
English learners can enroll in one of several kinds of programs, depending on where they live. There are transitional programs, in which students are mostly taught in their native language but also receive English training. And there are structured programs, which offer students almost all classroom teaching in English. These kinds of programs do not always permit students to become skilled at writing and reading in their own language, however. There are also so-called dual language immersion programs. These programs offer instruction in two languages, English and another language. Research has shown that English learners do best in dual language programs, especially if the second language is their own mother tongue. This is not a usual education model in America's public schools, however. A 2017 study by the Rand Corporation estimated that the U.S. has between 1,000 and 2,000 dual language immersion programs. By comparison, the United States has over 130,000 schools serving kindergarten through 12th grade students. The lack of high-quality bilingual programs is clear when considering student outcomes. Nationally, about 83% of students complete their high school education. But the graduation rate among English learners is far lower, 65%.
Before Proposition 227 passed in 1998, 30% of California's 1.3 million English learners took part in bilingual programs. But in the years after, only 5% were able to take part in such programs. This information comes from a report released last month by Education Next. Since the proposition was repealed, schools in California have been hoping to bring back bilingual programs. A 2017 public opinion study found that 58% of school districts in the state had plans to add or expand bilingual programs. However, 86% of those districts said the shortage of bilingual teachers was slowing those plans. Experts and school administrators told Education Next that school systems in California are stealing each other's teachers. To compete, many systems in the state now offer extra money for teachers with bilingual skills.
School systems across the country sometimes look for bilingual educators internationally. But education experts and policy organizations say there are ways for states to find and train new teachers in their local communities. One method involves growing more educators within the community. This is called Grow Your Own, or GYO. New America is a policy organization based in Washington, D.C. Its education policy team carries out research meant to strengthen America's educational system. It says Grow Your Own programs can both fix teacher shortages in states and increase the racial and linguistic diversity among teachers. It adds that local teacher candidates are more likely than overseas teachers to stay in the school system. This saves schools money and resources over time. This spring, New America released a list of Grow Your Own guidelines for schools and states to follow. It advised states to offer a mix of ways for bilingual teacher candidates to receive necessary certifications. It also suggested training local candidates even if they do not have a college degree.
Congressional lawmakers are also among those looking for ways to find and train bilingual teacher candidates. Last year, several lawmakers proposed a bill meant to address the problem. It is called the Reaching English Language Learners Act. If passed, the bill would give grants to colleges and universities to support the development of the next generation of ELL educators. The grant money would go toward developing programs meant to make sure teacher candidates have the knowledge and skills necessary to effectively teach English learners. Jim Langevin was among the lawmakers who proposed the bill to the House of Representatives, first in 2018 and again in February. Langevin is a Democratic Party congressman from Rhode Island. The bill has received support from Democrats and Republicans in both houses of Congress. Langevin said the bill would provide critical resources to help English learners and their teachers. I'm Katie Weaver.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. The presidential election of 1928 gave American voters a clear political choice. The Democratic Party nominated Al Smith. He was the popular governor of the state of New York. The Republican Party chose Herbert Hoover. He was an engineer and businessman who served as Secretary of Commerce for Presidents Warren Harding and Calvin Coolidge. Rich Kleinfeld and Harry Monroe tell us about the presidential election of 1928.
Governor Alfred Smith of New York had campaigned for the Democratic presidential nomination in 1924. But he was defeated at the party convention by a compromise candidate, John Davis. 4 years later, however, Smith could not be stopped. He had a strong record as governor of the nation's most heavily populated state. He campaigned for the presidency on a policy of building new electric power stations under public control. Smith knew that many conservative Americans might be worried by his new ideas and his belief in strong government. So he chose as his campaign manager a Republican industrial leader who had worked with General Motors, DuPont, and other major companies. Smith hoped this would prove his faith in the American private business system.
Al Smith was a strong political leader and an effective governor, but he frightened many Americans, especially conservative citizens living in rural areas. They lived on farms or in small towns. Al Smith was from the city. And not just from any city, but New York City, a place that seemed big and dirty and filled with foreign people and strange traditions. Al Smith's parents came from Ireland. He grew up in New York and worked as a salesman at the Fulton Fish Market. Smith was an honest man. But many rural Americans simply did not trust people from big cities. Al Smith seemed to them to represent everything that was new, different, and dangerous about American life. But being from New York City was not Al Smith's only problem. He also opposed the new national laws that made it illegal to buy or produce alcoholic drinks. and he had political ties to the New York political machine. But worst of all, in the eyes of many Americans, Al Smith was a Roman Catholic.
From George Washington through Thomas Jefferson, Abraham Lincoln, and up to Calvin Coolidge, every American president had been male, white, and a Protestant Christian. Of course, there was no law requiring a candidate to be Protestant, but millions of traditional Americans just were not ready to give their vote to a Roman Catholic. Opponents of the Smith campaign generally did not speak openly about his religion, but many of them were afraid that Smith would take his orders from the Vatican in Rome instead of working with the Congress in Washington. Al Smith fought back. He told the country, "I am unable to understand how anything I was taught to believe as a Catholic could possibly be in conflict with what is good citizenship. My faith," he said, "is built upon the laws of God. There can be no conflict between them."
But many Protestant Americans thought there was a conflict, and they looked to the Republican Party to supply a strong candidate to oppose Smith and the Democrats. The Republicans did just that. They nominated former Secretary of Commerce Herbert Hoover, one of the country's most popular men. Hoover was well known to Americans. People trusted him, and they liked the way he had gained great personal success from poor beginnings. In fact, Hoover's life story would have pleased Abraham Lincoln, another American who rose from a poor family to fame. Hoover was born in the farm state of Iowa in 1874. His father was a poor metal worker who kept moving his family from state to state. Herbert Hoover's father died when the boy was just 6 years old. His mother died 4 years later. Young Herbert had to move to the western state of Oregon to live with his mother's brother. Herbert's uncle was luckier in life than Herbert's parents. He had made money in the land business, and he helped the boy gain admission to Stanford University in California. At the university, Herbert showed great skill in mathematics, and he decided to go into business as a geologist, studying the science of the earth.
After college, Herbert Hoover got a job as a mine worker. During the next several years, Hoover spent most of his time working as an engineer in foreign countries. And he succeeded beyond his greatest dreams. By the time he was 40 years old, he had earned more than $1 million. After World War I, he organized the effort to provide food for starving people in Europe. He did an excellent job, winning praise from people in Europe and the United States alike. Next, Hoover joined the administration of President Warren Harding, serving as the Secretary of Commerce. Again, he did a very good job. Hoover left the cabinet in 1925. But 2 years later, he organized efforts to provide relief for victims of a flood in the southern state of Mississippi. And again, Americans all around the country took note of this quiet, serious man who did such effective work in so many different kinds of situations. Some Americans, however, did not like Hoover, including some people who usually supported Republicans. For example, many professional Republican politicians did not trust him because he had spent most of his life in business, not politics. Some stock market traders thought Hoover might change the rules on the New York Stock Exchange. And many farmers believed Hoover had no new ideas about how to solve their growing economic problems.
This, then, was the choice Americans faced in 1928. On the one hand, Al Smith, a Democrat, a Roman Catholic, a politician from the city, a man wanting some social change. And on the other hand, Herbert Hoover, a Republican, a businessman who had proven the dream that even a poor boy could become great in America. A man who seemed to succeed with every effort he touched. The main issue in the campaign was not economics or religion, but the new national laws banning alcoholic drinks. Hoover was for the laws. Smith against them. The two candidates also argued about how to provide aid to struggling farmers and how to increase electricity and water supplies.
Herbert Hoover won the election of 1928. It was one of the greatest victories in presidential history. Hoover won 58% of the votes. Smith got just 40%. And Hoover captured 444 electoral votes to Smith's 87. And so it was that the engineer and businessman, Herbert Hoover, entered the White House in 1929. There was some trouble the day he moved in. Outgoing President Coolidge was a man who watched every dollar he owned. And he accused some White House workers of stealing his shoes on the day of the inauguration. But finally, safe, conservative, businesslike Herbert Hoover was leading the country.
The nation's stock market reacted by pushing stock prices to record high levels. Everyone expected that economic growth would continue and expand. But the happy times were just a dream. Within 1 year, the stock market collapsed. Millions of people lost their jobs. The nation fell into the worst economic crisis it had ever faced. Herbert Hoover was not personally responsible for the crisis. In many ways, it was his own bad luck to be elected just before the disaster struck. But it was his job to guide the nation through its troubled waters. And he would prove to be the wrong person to give such leadership. His 4 years in office would be one of the most difficult periods in the nation's history.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.